Welcome to Health Naturally on 2NUR FM 103.7. Greg Richard, joined today by, well, as per usual, Dennis Stewart.
Hello, Greg. Nice to see you again.
Likewise.
Are you cold? You only have a T-shirt on.
I'm a little bit fresh, yeah. I've got a jacket in the other room, but...
Have you? Well, you should follow my example and not get pneumonia in the ice blocks.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I might have to duck back in between the songs and get another jacket.
Well, Dennis, okay.
Dennis, last week you were talking about Alzheimer's and also dementia as well, and was it ginkgo, was it?
Yeah, look, we spent a bit of time on ginkgo last week, and there have been a few questions delivered to my rooms about ginkgo, particularly as to how I've referred to it as a modern herbal medicine. I want to spend a bit of time looking at that concept and explaining why ginkgo is a modern, proven, scientifically proven, clinically proven herbal medicine for the modern times. I want to spend a bit of time on that again and then move on and look at some of the more traditional remedies from Europe, very traditional remedies, surprising traditional remedies that have potential to address this terrible syndrome of Alzheimer's.
You talked about ginkgo last week, and you wanted to touch on it again before you go to the more traditional...
Look, I do, Greg, because I don't think I'm ever emphasising this point, that I see modern preparations of this herb, ginkgo biloba, really giving us a great opportunity to be able to resist some of the diseases that we're all afflicted by. I consider ginkgo to be almost a necessity. Now, that's a big call. Almost a necessity for people who are getting on and who are prone to many diseases, but in particular to diseases associated with what we call cognitive deficiencies. That is, if you like, faltering memory, faltering functioning at the level that requires recall. And we all know what cognitive deficiency means as a technical term, but if you like, dementia and Alzheimer's could be seen as representative diseases where cognitive deficiency is a predominant symptom. Now, I believe ginkgo is important because, as a natural drug, if you want to call it, it has offered some very, very good support to resist particularly the early stages of dementia or Alzheimer's. And this is evidenced by the fact that in Western Europe, where ginkgo has made an incredible impact, in Western Europe, preparations, and I emphasise modern preparations of ginkgo biloba, are now prescription medications. In other words, ginkgo is seen, if you like, as any other medication, even though it is a natural drug, and it is prescribed by continental doctors because of the awareness that it has sustained a significant amount of clinical assessment and clinical use and has been shown to be effective in addressing that large proportion of people that are going to be afflicted by cognitive deficit diseases. Listeners might be quite surprised to know that at this moment, Alzheimer's disease affects 1 in 10 people over 65 years of age, 1 in 10, and almost half the people over 80. Now, that's a very, very,
very
big
high
percentage. Yep. It's very, very high. And it's worrying for ageing individuals like myself, one foot in the grave, so to speak. So that's why I think ginkgo is so precious and why I preach it a bit, because it does hold out real benefit. Look, there are other things coming on the market, cognitive deficit syndromes are going to spawn a multinational pharmaceutical effort to major in on this aspect of Western civilization today. And there'll be whiz-bang drugs presented, usually at whiz-bang prices, that no one will be able to afford unless governments like ours support them. And with the percentage of people getting dementia and Alzheimer's, it'll be a most unlikely thing that any government would want to come and fund them. But that, you can almost guarantee it. You can almost guarantee that the awareness of this aging syndrome will spawn a whole industry associated with designer drugs. They will promise, that we can all expect
the fountain of youth, I guess. Or
that's a lovely term, isn't it?
It is, the fountain of youth.
And I'm being a little bit sceptical, but this is where I think. This is where I think ginkgo should be given much more credit, and it won't be. It won't be because it's a natural medicine. And natural medicines don't make a lot of money for multinational companies. Yep. It doesn't mean they're ineffective. It means there's no money in them. Anyone can make a medication. Any pharmaceutical company can make a medication out of ginkgo and give it a name, but there are so many companies that could be doing that and probably are doing it, and it's not that one drug that's going to make a heap of money. It's not like the medications that were thrust on us by the COVID fantasy, which made billions of dollars for a number of companies who now almost shirk any responsibility for anything that's happened as a consequence of that. So I'm not being sceptical, I'm being realistic. I've seen it in my 45 years of being in the health professions, that natural drugs, whilst they do work and work under their own parameters, are not taken up in a big way. In my opinion, they're not taken up in a big way because, again, the big bucks are not in it for the pharmaceutical companies until that company stumbles upon some medication that will promise the anti-aging millennium, but unfortunately it's likely to be profitable for the company, and none of us down here and down under in the working class, few of us that are left, will be able to afford it. So I stand by my view that this is one of the most exciting preparations. But let me get back to your question. I have referred to ginkgo as being a modern preparation, a modern herbal preparation, if you like, different from more traditional preparations. And let me just elaborate on that. The modern preparations of ginkgo owe a lot to the work of German plant chemists after the Second World War who dissected and looked at the mature leaves of the ginkgo and isolated what were called the active principles associated with the herb. And they extracted, if you like, those active principles and put them into a modern form and a modern dosage. The ordinary leaf of the ginkgo is not the preparation of benefit in addressing dementia or Alzheimer's. Hence, when people ask me, even in my practice and occasionally on radio, why can't you just use the leaves as a tea of the ginkgo to achieve its benefits? Most herbs you can use as a water-based preparation, a herbal tea, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But the ginkgo leaf in its unextracted form is not effective and potentially allergenic. But the modern preparation that has taken the active principle out of the herb and put it into a finished form and then related it correctly to dosage is the preparation that has stormed Europe as an anti-aging remedy, particularly with ability potentially to resist the syndrome of memory loss and cognitive deficit.
All right, it's Health Naturally on 2NURFM. We'll talk a bit more about ginkgo and nutritional.
We will.
So we've got Daryl from Beresfield, and he's got a question about mouth ulcers. Afternoon, Daryl.
G'day, Dennis. How you going?
I'm very well, Daryl. How are you?
All right, but I've got mouth ulcers.
Oh, dear. Do you get them frequently, or is this just an episode?
Well, I've had chemotherapy and radiation therapy and all that, and then I get these mouth ulcers.
Okay. How long have you had the ulcers for, Daryl?
About 3 months.
3 months. Ooh, okay. Look, I'll make a couple of simple suggestions that will hopefully cause these things to take up. They are usually very responsive to a couple of herbs when those herbs are used as a mouthwash. So we're talking here about preparations that, if you like, are topical preparations, that is, preparations that are used as the basis of a wash where you can swish it round in your mouth, so to speak, And the end result in many cases is a reduction in the intensity of them, a slowing down of their occurrence, and a hastening of their resolution. There are two herbs. The one herb that is very, very strongly recommended in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia, which I keep saying on this program, is essentially the Bible of modern herbal medicine. But the preparation is called tincture of myrrh, M-Y-R-R-H, tincture of myrrh. Now, any compounding pharmacist who has a herbal medicine dispensary would be able to supply tincture of myrrh. It was very popular in pharmacy and is still used by herbalists, but reasonably accessible. Now, in using that, what you would take is the tincture of myrrh in a small amount and mix it with an equal, with a large amount of water, say a tumbler of water. I'd suggest, and I haven't got the literature in front of me here, exact dosage, but say something like a level teaspoonful of tincture of myrrh in a tumbler of warm water. Use that. I've recommended it. Use that as a means of helping resolve this condition. That is one herb that has given me good results and is based on sound literature. The other herb, which is a well-known herb, but not particularly used by our profession even to address this, but yet in European medicine, and I checked this out this morning in some of the references that I have, it is a very popular preparation, again, essentially is a herbal tea, where one takes a teaspoonful of the dried herb and allows it to soak or be infused by, say, a couple of cups of warm water, or preferably boiling water, allowed to cool down. And then that herbal infusion, as we call it, the herbal tea in simpler terms, is used again as a mouthwash. And sage is very, very confidently recommended as an infusion, say a teaspoonful of the dried herb. You should be able to get the herb red sage, or just call it sage, salvia officinalis. You should be able to even get it in a little bag from the supermarket. And therefore, it would probably be more accessible than tincture of myrrh. But both those preparations I would see as being potentially very useful, have given me good results in the past. I'd suggest, however, start with the one that's most accessible. Go and get some powder or dried herb of sage. Make the herbal tea of it. Make sure it's not scalding or anything. You have to make it on hot water, but allow it to cool, and then rinse your mouth out with it a couple of times a day, and hopefully that'll speed up the resolution of these things.
Yeah, well, my doctor told me I've got to eat fruit.
Ah, okay.
If I eat fruit, it might get it to go down, but, you know, yeah.
Well, fruit's good for you. Fruit's good for you. He might have been hinting that fruit contains some vitamin C, but I would question whether fruit generally is as useful as some of the more medical approaches that I've spoken about, where one uses measured amounts of medicinal substances such as myrrh and sage. I would think that they would compete more favourably than eating fruit all day long.
Well, thank you, Dennis. I'll chase that up tomorrow.
Well, do the sage thing first, because it's the least expensive, and you get the dried herb from the supermarket, I'm sure. If not, a health food store would have it.
Yep. Okay, then. Thank you very, very much.
Okay.
We've got Trish from Adamstown, and she might have a remedy for mouth ulcers.
I was listening to Dennis and the gentleman with the mouth ulcers. I had a daughter who had mouth ulcers chronically as a young child, an infant and toddler, and nothing would work. I think the doctor actually prescribed Kenacome in Orobase, and I had to be brave and put my finger in her mouth and cover all the ulcers with that, and hope she didn't bite me. But I it worked okay. But it really didn't get rid of them. I read a book about natural health, and it was by Dorothy Hall and I think someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, she recommended for ulcers anything with folic acid. Spinach was the top one. But children don't like spinach, so I used to make spinach and cheese and put it into triangles and, you know, do cheese and spinach triangles. After a while, I just sweetened the spinach with cheese, just like a melt. But any time she got a bout of ulcers, or I did, I just have that, and maybe a day later, after having one or two serves of spinach, the mouth ulcers would go. So I would highly recommend it, and apparently it's the folic acid in it. Whether that works on someone who's had chemo and radiation, I'm not sure. But it's really cheap and easy to try out.
That's good feedback, Trish. I knew Dorothy Hall very well. In fact, she and I were lecturing in Sydney in the late 70s and early 80s. Dorothy was teaching at Balmain and I was teaching it in Glebe. So we got to know each other very well, even though we had two entirely different systems of herbal medicine. So anything that Dorothy recommended, I would respect. However, what you have said there is something that I'm not that familiar with, and most cases of chronic ulceration, if you like, ulcers that keep occurring, I treat them along a different line. I've spoken earlier about managing with natural remedies the presence of ulcers. But as far as the recurrence of ulceration is concerned, I use what's called a celloid, a C-L-L-O-I-D. Now, a celloid is a mineral preparation that is part of the mineral range that was developed by the founder of Blackmores, Morris Blackmore, who developed celloid or mineral therapy, the argument being that frequently mineral deficiency manifests itself in various pathologies. And in a section dealing with mouth ulcers, the interestingly, the primary remedy is a very, very dilute preparation in a celloid form of calcium fluoride and potassium chloride. Those minerals are recommended. I'm pretty sure that's what they are. They're in the Blackmores manual that I work from. So I have tended, where you get people that have a chronic condition, I tend to work around prescribing the celloids, A, because they're economical, B, because they have a good history of benefit, and when they can be reinforced by topical management, they tend to give me a good result. Okay. Look, put it this way, The way that Dorothy has presented it and the interpretation that you put on Dorothy's method has proven to be very effective. So stick with it. What I mean, there are obviously many ways of addressing conditions such as this, and that is an interesting and novel way which you have proven to be effective, coming from the wisdom of one of Australia's greatest medical herbalists who sadly has passed, but made a great contribution along lines that can be reflected in people using simple things to address a wretched problem.
Thanks very much there. Trish, we've got Steve now from Thornton, and he's got a question about the pancreas.
Yeah, how you going, Dennis?
Hello, Steve.
Yeah, I've just been diagnosed with pancreatitis.
Yes.
I was just wondering, you know, what I can take for it, that's all.
Look, are you being treated by your doctor for it?
Not really.
Okay. Is it associated with alcohol ingestion?
Oh, well, over the years, I guess.
Yeah. Look,
but I've cut that right out.
Yeah. The best advice that I would give here is, look, just let the organ itself go into a phase of healing. I'm not aware. Unlike the liver, the pancreas is not something that has been traditionally treated by medical herbalists. Some say that the liver herb, St. Mary's thistle, also spreads its benefit to the pancreas, but I've not been able to confirm that. I think in your situation, this thing just came out of the blue, did it, or have you had it before?
No, it just came out of the blue.
Okay. And it, how long ago would that have been, Steve?
A couple of months ago, I found out.
Have the symptoms eased over that period of time?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, look, this confirms what I was hinting at. The best thing to do is obviously stay away from alcohol. Your pancreas is on the way for recovery because the symptom of associated with pancreatitis has lessened. So whatever you're doing, which is probably nothing, but be cautious about what you eat and drink, just stay with that. I would not recommend any herbs because even the simplest and most innocuous of herb might just be sufficient to react and trigger off some aggravation of the condition.
All right.
Okay, sadly, you just have to wear it as you are. You're recovering. That's good. Stay with the monitoring of your doctor and just follow that pathway, Steve.
We've got Leonie from Lake Haven, and she's looking for an alternative to, was it Ginkgo Biloba?
Biloba.
I'm thinking
Biloba. Say it again, Greg. Biloba.
Biloba. I'm thinking, well, I'm thinking of a song or something, I think. Or I might just...
Well, you know, you get hooked on these jobs, you know, and you pick up all the pop culture.
Mm. It is a good name, though.
What?
Ginkgo Biloba. It, kind of, it rolls off the tongue a little bit.
Of course it's a great name.
Leonie, you're looking for an alternative?
Hi, yeah. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
I'm well, Leonie. I'm putting up with things today. And, yeah.
I know. I heard. I was having a good giggle. I take Ginkgo Biloba. I call it Biloba.
Biloba.
Anyway.
Ginkgo Biloba. B-I-L-O-B-A. Oh, okay. Say it again. Biloba.
Ginkgo Biloba. Okay, I've got it now. Anyway, I take Ginkgo Biloba.
Yes, yes.
But my husband had a heart attack and he's on blood thinners and he can't take it. Yes. So I was just wondering, is there an alternative...
Okay. I'll mention a couple of things, but in mentioning them, I would suggest that you run what I suggest past the pharmacist or your doctor.
Yes.
I'm not in my rooms, so I haven't got my references in front of me. But interestingly, one of the herbs that I was going to speak about today, particularly for addressing cognitive disorders similar to those that ginkgo is used for. This might sound rather quaint, but I suggest what you do is Google, and you'll find that I'm pretty right. But you might remember that there is a saying, rosemary for memory or remembrance.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, for,
now, that is based on a strong tradition coming from the Middle Ages, that this herb was used to address conditions which we now refer to as being characterised by cognitive deficits. So I was going to spend some time today looking at rosemary. If I get a chance, I might look at it with you next week, because there is some scientific credibility supporting the claim that it is, together with the herb sage, useful...
Okay.
As, and I say useful, potentially useful, and I'm referring to a text. Most of my talks, I refer to texts, either what I've read in the past or presently reading. But in the National Geographic's text entitled Desk Reference to Nature's Medicine. Now, I'll go slowly on that, because if listeners can get hold of this book, which I'm sure they can, it is a gem... In presenting, if you like, a modern rendition of traditional herbal medicine. The name of the book again.
That?
Yes, I will, and I'll go slowly because listeners frequently hang on these books. National Geographic, Desk Reference to Nature's Medicine. By Stephen Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R, Stephen Foster. Stephen Foster, great American herbalist that I had the pleasure of meeting many, many years ago. If you purchase that book and look at rosemary and also look at sage, they share a commonality of benefit, and there is a pharmacological explanation as to how both those herbs could be very beneficial in addressing disorders associated with the cognitive conditions. So at the risk of sounding very simple and simplistic, one of the oldest European remedies is rosemary, which also runs parallel, if you like, with the herb sage, mm-hmm. both of which have an emerging explanation behind them as to how they resist some of the degenerative functions associated with Alzheimer's and dementia. So in your husband's situation, rosemary, even used as a regular infusion, water-based preparation, I might just conclude by saying that most European preparations are based on water. They're water-based preparations or herbal teas, which I like because they're simple, inexpensive, and very, very safe. So the use of that, a couple of cups of rosemary tea a day, you will know that it's working when he's remembering too much.
Oh, that might be a problem, actually. I'll cut down the cheese then.
Give that a go. Give it a go. All right.
Okay. And with the rosemary, can I just get rosemary and infuse it with water?
Is that how you do it? Yeah, I would say again, go to your supermarket, health food store, and get some dried rosemary, which has already been cut and powdered, and the normal proportion is a level teaspoonful of the herb into a coffee cup, pour on boiling water, just like you make a cup of coffee, let it infuse, strain it, and drink it in a cool preparation, put some honey with it.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I suppose it's the same with sage, is it?
Sage, exactly.
Yes. All right, then. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, Dennis. You're brilliant, and I listen to you every week, and I take notes.
Well, that's good. You'll be able to write a textbook, something I've never done.
Yeah, right. I don't think I will ever do that. But what I'd like to do when I finally retire is actually study herbal medicine. You've got me really enthusiastic about it.
All I'd say is that some of my best students, and I've taught hundreds over many years, some of my best students have been women. Mature women.
Yes, now, I'm very mature.
Well, that's all the better because you bring with you wisdom. That's a great virtue, more than the highest university document can be the obtaining of wisdom.
Yes, this is true. At 72,
you're only a baby, mate. I'm years in front of you.
And you sound fantastic.
Oh, do I?
There you go.
I'll have to tell my wife that when I get home.
You will.
I don't know what the consequences will be. Probably not much, but I'll tell her that anyway.
Thanks, Dennis. Thank you so much.
All right,
thank you for giving us some wisdom every week. I hang on what you say.
Thanks, Leonie. Okay. Jeez,
thanks, Leonie. Dennis Stewart, we have sadly run out of time.
We had a good time today, Greg.
We did a couple of laughs.
I'll say it again. I'm worried about you being in the studio that's so cold.
Yeah, I'm going to...
In a black T-shirt. Worrying me, Greg. You've stressed me.
I'm going to race and get my jacket.
Think you should.
I might sit by the toaster for a little bit as well.
Afterwards. All right.
Dennis, to catch you next week.
See you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.